Claire, and you're listening to the Mother Love Podcast, a show where we talk about the journey of parenting. This is a space where guests open their hearts, gather their courage, and tell the truth about what it means to care for these messy and delightful little ones in today's big, wide, and often overwhelming world. We talk about the pressures, the steep learning curves, and the bittersweet reality of watching our children grow. Parenting asks us to be willing to feel it all, celebration and grief, joy and anguish, fear and courage. So take a breath, let these stories wash over you, and show yourself a little love. Hi everyone, thanks for being back with us today. We have Cammy back. We're so lucky to have Cammy here with us, and we're going to continue the conversation from the episode we had last week. If there are folks listening who didn't listen last week, I'm going to give Cammy a second to do her beautiful introduction and just share with us who you are, Cammy. And then Amy Stiffarm, my buddy, who more often than not joins me on the podcast. I'm just like unofficially making Amy the co-host of Mother Love. Yeah. But you're here with me too, and I'm really excited to be able to kind of just sit back and just allow this beautiful conversation between the two of you to happen. So here we are. Amy's here. Cammy, go ahead and introduce yourself if you would again.
Yeah, so great. Well, I'm Petiwashtemi Takiapi, Cammy Goldhammer Makiapie, Damakota, Sisituan, Wapituan, Hamacha. So good day, relatives. My name's Cammy Goldhammer. I am a Dakota woman, so you, she, her pronouns, and I am Sisseton Wapitan Oyate, and coming to you from the land of the Duwamish people, also known as Seattle. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, a lactation consultant, and a full spectrum Indigenous doula.
Wow. Yay. Thank you, Cammy.
Hashtag Shiro. Yeah. And like Claire said, I'm Amy Stiffarm. I'm director of the Native American Initiatives Program at HMHB. I'm originally from Fort Belknap. I'm Aani, Chippewa Cree, Blackfeet, and also calling in from Helena, so common hunting grounds, but also traditional territory to my ancestors. So yeah, happy to be here and happy to be able to crash the podcast and talk to Cammy.
Yes.
Yay. Well, I just got to say, like, I really loved the podcast. I was like, I don't even think like a few minutes in, like, crying, like, after dropping my girls off at school. I'm like, oh my God, it's not even 9 o'clock and I'm like crying. But yeah, it's just, I just love hearing, like, it's just so, the work is so personal to you. And I just like, just really appreciate that. And I liked, you know, kind of towards the end, you guys are just starting to talk or wanting to talk about like what's working well in Washington. And, you know, I'm always like fangirling about all the work that you all are doing there. So where do you want to start? Like, should we start with Hummingbird, or where do you think is a good place to start?
That might be a good place to start. There is a lot of incredible work happening here, and definitely what we're doing at Hummingbird is special and unique in its own way. But, you know, for sure there's definitely a energy here, you know, when it comes to what's happening. Part of that is like, we are kind of the birthplace of the modern birth worker world, you know? So like the kind of modern doulas, you know, or mainstream doulas like that kind of all started here. And so there's, you know, it's just an area that has a lot, is pretty, we call it a birth bubble, right? Like this little bubble of a place. Even though there's lots of challenges here, it's still, compared to the rest of the country, there's a lot of amazing things happening. But yeah, I'm down for whatever.
Ooh, okay. Well, let's just start there. It's funny because when I first met you and first knew about your work, you were doing the coalition work, like statewide Native American coalition for breast and chest feeding. And so now you're kind of, I don't know, more at a sort of statewide kind of local level, but I will say, you know, you're definitely still a state leader, but I think being able to have like a direct impact on the community, can you kind of talk a little bit about that and like kind of your like your why or how, your why and how, I guess.
Yeah. It is really interesting because I've been doing national work for a long time. And a lot of times people go from doing like really local work to national work. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like love that this work has brought me back to Washington and really focusing on, you know, and I've always physically been here, but a lot of times when I first started, I did have to leave the area to like have people really care about what I was talking about. Right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, Amy, you know, you reached out to me years ago. I mean, that had to have been well over 10 years ago at this mm-hmm. point, right? Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, a memory pops up of when I was, you know, like when you brought me out to, where were we, Flathead, right? Mm-hmm. Like the, and speaking there. But yeah, I mean, like with the breastfeeding work and the Native American Breastfeeding Coalition of Washington, that was kind of my first, even though I had worked as a therapist in the Native community and was focused on families and stuff like that. But then I had my, you know, my baby, and you guys heard about my experience with my baby in the first one. And we talked about how protective breastfeeding was of my birthing experience and my postpartum experience, right? And I'm really grateful for that. And so that's kind of what, you know, got me kind of wanting to learn more about that. I eventually had to return to work about 8 weeks, seven, 8 weeks postpartum. And I was trying to think about with my first, I was trying to, you know, figure out where to pump because I was a social worker. So I'm like in the field, in a car, you know, like, how do I pump? I've only been nursing this kid, like that kind of stuff. And so I asked some mom friends that I had made, you know, we shared a midwife, and they're all white moms. And most of them, if not all of them, worked for like tech industry. So they had like 6 months off, right, with their babies. I mean, really long parental leaves. So when I was like, hey, like, have you guys pumped yet? Like, what's going on? And they had nothing, like no advice for me, right? And so I was trying to figure out where to get some help. And I found La Leche League, you know, as an option. And so I went to a La Leche League meeting, and I walked into the meeting, and it was at a church. So already I'm like, I don't know about this place, right? So mm-hmm. I go to the church, and then I walk in, and it was, I mean, the scene is just hilarious now, but you know, it was all white ladies nursing their kids, including one person who was sitting on a desk nursing her child who was standing on the ground, you know, because he was like 3 or 4 years old. And I, you know, you got to remember, I had never even seen anyone breastfeed in my life prior to me breastfeeding, right? So then to kind of walk into this place and have all these like ethereal white ladies like nursing toddlers and, you know, stuff like that, I was like, what is happening in here? You know, it was wild. And so of course the irony of all that is that I breastfed my kids till they were 4 and 5 years mm-hmm. old, right? And the person that was breastfeeding her toddler is my mentor as a lactation consultant, you know, so she's who trained me as right. a lactation consultant. So, but at the time I was like, this is witchcraft. Kind of freaked out. Yeah. I mean, I was like, I don't know what's going on in here. I let him know I was returning to work and I am a social worker and I'm going to be in my car and I don't have a set schedule because I do home visits and everything. And the only thing that all of the dozen different moms had to like provide for me as far as advice was, do you really need to go back to work?
Oh boy.
Yeah.
You know, like, do you really need to go back? She's so little, you know, I mean, it was this thing. And I was like, I mean, I was like flabbergasted, right? I'm like, mm-hmm. I really need to go back to work. Like, am I a money tree? Like, what do you think? Mm-hmm. And that's what really, you know, I went home from that meeting feeling really shitty, you know, I'm really crappy. Not only because one, I knew I was a good mom, but two, I also found a lot of value in my work, you know, and I love my work. You know, I was a therapist in the Native community at the time, preventing child removal. That was my whole goal. Mm-hmm. You know, so that was really meaningful to me for a lot of reasons. And then just to have these people be like, well, do you have to return to work? You know, mm-hmm. And not that returning to work was not heartbreaking for me. It was a devastating, you know, thing to do, but I always knew I'd have to do it. And I know, you know, like it was just going to be part of our story. And so I, you know, went home and started Googling like Native American breastfeeding support, lactation support for Indigenous mom. I mean, I was like, I tried every single different Google, whatever words you can think of, combos, and nothing came up except for the Navajo Nation Breastfeeding Coalition's worksite lactation law, because they had the year before passed a worksite lactation law. So that's when I learned that there was a Native breastfeeding coalition somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. And that they worked on things like where it's like lactation. And so that was really, that was like my lifeline, you know. Other than that, every picture, you know, the pictures that came up were all old, you know, old. They were ancestors, right? And there was nothing modern. There was not a single image 15 years ago of a Native woman in present day breastfeeding her baby anywhere on the internet.
Wow.
Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, that's just wild. It's just like this wild concept, right? And now when you look it up, like, there's so many. It's awesome.
There's you.
There was a lot of
now when you look it up, it's Cammie.
No, but I have to say, and this is like one of my favorite things, so that I have to say this, is that, you know, that was Cammie's experience 15 years ago. And then 10 years ago, when I was breastfeeding and looking for Native American support, when I was typing that same, doing that same search, Cammie showed up for me. And so I just think it's so impactful. I mean, honestly, even my schooling and all of that, like my spark, my inspiration was from reading like some of your early blog posts. And yeah. So I think like it's so cool the impact that you're having, like how you're helping people one-on-one, like you do direct service. You started this program and all of this work, reducing maternal mortality and infant mortality. But, you know, even the impact as far as the inspiration that you've inspired for other people like me to come into this and try to help too. And so, yeah, it's just really, so I thank you. I'm just sorry that that was your experience, but I feel really blessed that I had a different experience because of you.
Yeah, no, I love that story too. And it is really special. And I think that that's something that, you know, I learned a long time ago that, no, you know, like no one was going to fight for us. No one was going to fight for our community, right? We could sit around and wait all day for the mainstream lactation world to do something, care about.
Make room,
right? For just BIPOC folks, right? Mm-hmm. You want to like, you talk about the I in the BIPOC, then like, we're not even, you know, like in the back of someone's mind, you know, kind of thing. And so for better or for worse, I'm not the most patient person. And so I've, you know, kind of have this thing of like, if I see a need for something, we'll fill that, you know, and I have the ability to fill it, right? Or do something about it. You know, I have a skill set and that's great. And there are other, you know, there's other gaps in the world that I cannot fill that skill set. And so I don't bother with it. But yeah, I've always seen this as a moral and ethical obligation. Mm-hmm. You know, like it is absolutely a responsibility for me. And that's, you know, really what's kind of been driving it all. So mm-hmm. Yeah, that was, you know, that was those early days, you know, and we just started out the Native American Breastfeeding Coalition of Washington. We just started out, you know, doing some speaking gigs here and there, going to powwows, tabling at powwows, having a space for moms to nurse at, things like that. And it was good, you know. Mm-hmm. But then it just, you know, we only went so far, which I didn't have a strong desire. I've never really been kind of like, oh, I want to grow. But it was, you know, it was just, I don't know. There was what I've recognized is that, you know, every community has their different priorities. Mm. And in those early days in Washington State, breastfeeding was not a large priority of our Indigenous communities, you know. And I remember helping a Tulalip mom who was having some challenges with pumping. She worked in the casino, you know, as a dealer, and she was having some challenges pumping at work because the room that they could pump in was on the other side of the casino from where she could keep her pump. And so she, you know, she'd have her like 15-minute break because this was before pump time breaks were protected, right? Mm-hmm. So she would have her 15-minute break and she didn't have enough time to walk to where the pump was, to walk to the room where she could pump, walk it back to, you know, like, right? Like that whole mm-hmm. thing. And so then there was some power dynamics because one of the pit bosses was also pumping and she kind of like would kick people out of the room if it was her time to pump, you know, really like asserting her authority as the pit boss and her, mm-hmm. her seniority mm-hmm. And power over this other mom. So it was just really challenging. And so I was working with, you know, I was like, all right, let's work with the tribe to create like a breastfeeding policy, a pumping policy for the casino. I was like, you know, because one of the ideas was, can she just bring her pump to the table? They were like, no, you can't have anything at the tables because of stealing and right, mm-hmm. like those kinds of things. And so like, no, you can't do that, which I get. And this is a pumping mom, right? This is a lactating mm-hmm. parent. We treat, they're different. They're protected. They're sacred. Let's treat them that way. Mm-hmm. But I was, you know, trying to work with like tribal council about that. And then they had a school shooting, you know, which was happened at around like this exact same time where a Tulalip tribal member killed several kids at his school. Several of them were also Tulalip tribal members. And I remember like one of the council members telling me, we just buried five of our children, you know, we don't have time to care about this right now, you know? Mm-hmm. And stuff. And it was really this moment where I was like, okay, I'm going to put my focus on communities that do care about this, mm-hmm. right? Because there are other communities that it was important to them, you know? And that's what kind of took me out of the state for a little bit, you know, where I was mm-hmm. traveling and, you yeah. know, coming to Montana, working in Indian Health Service, going to Arizona, going to Oklahoma, right? Kind of like going all over, which was an incredible experience for me. But I, you know, I just learned a lot of like, hey, a lot of our communities are going through lots of things. And even though breastfeeding's my most important thing, and I absolutely see it as prevention, right, of these things, that it's okay that others can't prioritize that right now because they are in survival mode, right? And mm-hmm. how can you get people to care about breastfeeding when they're dealing with mass shootings and suicides and epidemic level overdoses and violent, right? Like all that other stuff. So yeah, that's kind of how that went, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, there are some areas that really care about this. So maybe that's what I'll do. But it made me, you know, and so I always did the direct service locally, you know, like still I'd help people out. I did a drop-in group out of my house for 7 years, you know, a little over 7 years. So I helped out folks individually or the dyad, right, where I could. I became a lactation consultant during that time, you know, worked on my training and education. But yeah, I just kind of let that go and figured there'll be a time that's right for us here in Washington. And here we are, you know, and it's like really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Well, what's really cool about that too is like you are doing a lot of national work and it is with communities that care. We kind of talk about this. We've talked about this before where what you do with your Indigenous breastfeeding or Indigenous lactation consultant trainings, you don't have to ask or like advertise even. Yeah.
We don't.
You've always been invited. And I think like that is just such a paradigm shift, especially for like programs that are just so like, oh, we have this, like do this and like push, yeah, push these interventions on Indigenous communities. So it's just like hearing kind of that and you're like, all right, well, let's go to the communities that care. Like you did that and you created a curriculum to be, yeah, able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is, that's a really, really important part, you know, of the Indigenous lactation counselor training, is that we only go to places we're invited to, because even, you know, even as Native people, we can still harm others by asserting our own agendas and priorities into those communities. And I learned that because I was trying to do it, right? Mm-hmm. Like I recognize like, hey, I don't know all the things. I'm not, you know, it's a humbling experience, you know, mm-hmm, to be in that position. And I do care a great, I mean, I do think breastfeeding's the answer. I do think it's important, you know, and I wish that everyone understood that. And not everyone can. And so with the Indigenous lactation counselor training, that's a really integral part to it. And well, it's a non-negotiable for us. We only go where we're invited. And that goes a long way. You know, that goes a long way with the number of people that come to those trainings, how successful they are. And then, you know, what's really cool, like our sisters at Zagiduin, which is a doula training, you know, and I know there's been at least one Zagiduin training in Montana.
Four now, I think.
Four right now. That's even better. That's incredible.
So, I got to go to one finally.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, like we've gotten to go to so many of the same communities. And so we're really, you know, I've told Melissa and Candace, you know, I was like, we really got to get someone to like evaluate this, right? Like what happens when you have the doula training and the breastfeeding training in a community? Like what happens there, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is really special, and it's such an honor to be invited to places. You know, there is something about that when you're asked to come to a tribal community, it means a lot that you're trusted in that way, and that people, you know, when people feel good about you coming, right? Mm-hmm. That means a lot to Kim and I, mm-hmm, who I teach with, you know, like it's really, really important to us, and we don't take our role as guests lightly, right? When we teach, we're like, yes, we're teachers, but we're guests first. So
yeah,
we really come in that way.
Kami, can I ask a question? Mm-hmm. I would love to hear what you think about kind of the shift in, like, for a long time, the saying or the slogan was breast is best. And now there's been a shift to fed is best, so that it's like a more inclusive, uh-huh, or comfortable. I know I'm seeing the look on your face. And I'm curious because I think it's been a really difficult like issue for people to talk about. And I would love to hear, because you do feel strongly, mm-hmm, that breastfeeding is really important. And I would love to just hear you honestly speak to that.
Yeah. Okay.
And one thing I want to say before you like go into your response to this is that one of the reasons I love to hear from you in particular is because if people, again, didn't listen to the episode, yeah, previous to this, this was something that you were not adamant about breastfeeding your children.
Correct.
You didn't know very much at, yeah, all, but there was this one influential event that happened in your life that pretty much changed and made you aware of how important it was for you. And, yeah, so it's not like I'm asking this to someone who, like, your whole life you were like, absolutely, breastfeeding for, like, you know,
I this decided has, this to is try something, and breastfeed at, right, the hospital. Yes.
Totally. For really cool reasons. That's a plug for the last episode.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So, yeah. So that's, I think that's important context to consider.
Yeah.
With you answering this.
No, absolutely. So, yes, the breast is best, fed is best, you know, situation. I will just tell you, I don't like either. So, and I don't talk about breastfeeding as best in general. I'll address fed as best first.
Okay.
I am generally not a fan, mostly because of there is a lobby behind fed is best. And that's what a lot of people don't, you know, the they've done a good job at getting their message out there, which is fed is best, right? But many people use that term not recognizing where it actually comes from and originated, right? Mm-hmm. And I, you know, and you guys heard this in the first episode too, I dream big for my community. I dream big for moms and babies. I believe that we deserve nothing but the best, nothing but excellence, right? Mm-hmm. Like for moms and babies. And to me, saying something like fed is best is not a very high bar, mm-hmm. right? Like that's a very, very, very low bar to me. Of course, even right. as a lactation consultant, number one rule, and I teach this in my class, our number one rule is feed the baby.
Yeah.
Right? I work with people with breastfeeding problems. If you don't think that an overwhelming majority of the people I work with are not formula feeding their babies, because the number one rule is to feed the baby, right? Yeah. So if our baby that I'm working with is not getting enough food, then that baby needs to have additional calories, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and I believe that next to human milk, formula, artificial infant formula is absolutely the most appropriate thing for that child to eat, right?
Right.
So I get really turned off again with like fed is best, because I dream a lot bigger for moms and babies. You know, I want a lot more for them than just to grow.
Yeah.
Right. Like I want a lot more for babies than to just grow.
Yeah.
Okay. And then again, like just kind of the lobby and the people behind that, I have some questions and concerns and curiosities about them and their stories and their motives, you know?
Right. Yep.
That being said, I came into the field of lactation as a mental health therapist, right? So I have an immense amount of empathy for the grief that people go through when their breastfeeding experiences do not happen the way they had hoped them to happen.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I recognize that grief and trauma and those hurts can manifest in people in a lot of different ways, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Some people you accept it and you move on and you're like, well, I tried, it didn't work out. Okay. Right.
Right.
And other people are devastated.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right. Other people are devastated. You know, Claire, you and I talked about devastating births, right? That did not go despite having a healthy baby, despite, you know, that our births did not go the way we wanted. And it was a hard situation to be, right? Where other people go through the same experiences and they're fine, right?
Totally. Yep.
So I think, you know, I think that, again, a lot of that around like fed is best, there's a lot going on there. Mm-hmm. You know, I do believe that the founder, her, what happened with her child is an atrocity and she should have been given better care and support, you know, for her baby.
Right.
And I also believe it was not breastfeeding, you know, or the pressure to breast or whatever that caused.
Yeah. That's a good distinction.
Yeah. So those are, you know, that's kind of like my initial thoughts there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it can be devastating even if, like I speak to a lot of women that are devastated about their breastfeeding journey, even if in the end they were able to continue breastfeeding their baby as they had wished and hoped.
Yeah.
The beginning can be so painful and bumpy and traumatic and hard and difficult for bonding and all of those things that even in like the great outcome of like, yay, I wanted to breastfeed and I was able to breastfeed. Like there were a lot of times in my mothering journey that was super devastating to me because I had a picture in my mind of how beautiful it was going to be. And then it was totally treacherous and scary. Mm-hmm. And I felt like a failure. And there were all those like common things. And I think that you talk to a lot of moms who like have that devastation and grief they have to go through no matter what, you know? Yeah. And for me, it was a lack of support, but it was also like that whole thing where I didn't feel like I should ask for support or accept support.
Yeah, because we're just supposed to know how to do these.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that's the great lie is that mothering is natural, right? Like that, it's just the biggest lie we have allowed to like perpetuate itself through society. Like it is just not true.
Yeah.
It is a learned behavior. Mm-hmm. And we learn it through being mothered or not being mothered, and through being supported by other mothers, being coached by other mothers, taught by, you know, like we are, it is not natural, you know, and I just, I find that to be so, you know, so challenging. And, and I think that that is a big part of why breastfeeding is so hard for so many people, because one, most of us haven't seen it, right? We haven't grown up around seeing it. We go to hold our baby for the first time to breastfeed and their mouth is up by our armpit, you know, like,
just,
right? Like the very basic things, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, like it is really hard, and there's a lot of emotion, you know, there's just so much emotion wrapped up into it. The other thing I'll say about things like fed is best, or the spectrum that can be on, right? Like, because there's I do really want to address and kind of call out how incredibly white centered that conversation is, you know. And that took me a little while to get there, because my lactation mentors were all white women too. You know, I mean, that is kind of who drives the narrative around mainstream lactation. You know, that's why we have the images of like, this should be easy, right? Like, I'm just going to latch my baby and the birds will sing and the, you know, clouds will part and I'll be in a white dress and it's just beautiful, you know, like sitting next to lambs. Like, it's this thing, this whole vision that people think. And it's like, that's just not, you know, the reality is that it's messy and there's lots of tears and it's really, really hard. And there are society doesn't really allow for us to have the type of postpartum experience that we should have, which really is to establish breastfeeding and heal our body, right? Like that is what the postpartum experience should be, you know? And I don't remember if we talked about it in the last one, but, you know, we often talk about like these 40 days or this, you know, this time period of rest after you have your baby, that a lot of that, the whole purpose of that is to establish breastfeeding, because we really shouldn't be out and about, you know, like doing all the things and taking care of a whole bunch of other kids and cooking, you know, just kind of like re-engaging in our day-to-day life. And on top of that, you have to feed a baby, you know, 100% with your own body. So it's, I mean, it is really challenging. But kind of like going back to how this conversation is really white centered, and I've spent a lot of time on kind of like fed, you know, I like lurk on forums, you know, kind of like fed is best, like Facebook page, and I'll probably get blocked now. No, but I never engage. I want to know what people's experiences are. What is the experience of mom's day-to-day lives, right? Like what's going on? What are they saying? So I, you know, I see a lot there. And one of the very, you know, very common things that we hear is that the difference that breastfeeding makes is nominal, you know, is like a lot of the kind of like fed is best for, you know, pro formula, anti-breastfeeding. I mean, there's different ways you can see it, right?
Right.
So that is really frustrating as a Native person to hear that, because the bottom line is that one, and I, this is actually, let me kind of go back. So kind of breast is best, right? I mentioned I'm not really a fan of that either. Because what I see with that is it kind of puts breastfeeding on this pedestal that it really shouldn't be on. And a lot of folks in lactation, this isn't a novel thought at all. You know, a lot of people in lactation talk about it, but what we say is breastfeeding is the norm, right? Mm-hmm. Breastfeeding is the biological norm at which everything should be compared to. So it's not so much the best. I mean, that would be like saying something like not having diabetes is the best. You know, like, well, no, like our, as humans, we shouldn't have cancers. We shouldn't have diabetes. Like, we shouldn't have these chronic illnesses. That is not, you know, like, that's not our norm, right? And our goal shouldn't necessarily, like, that. Yeah. I don't know if I'm explaining this correctly. And so when I think about, you know, when it comes to things like breastfeeding, it's like, yeah, no, this is just the way our bodies are supposed to live and be and function.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, and that it's just the norm, which means that there's only risks associated with not breastfeeding, right? Yeah. And so that language really kind of makes the health outcomes of, you know, like formula fed kiddos or whatever, you know, and again, we're talking public health numbers. So, you know, people will always bring up, well, my kid, this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I was a formula fed baby. Oh my God. I thank creator every day that I don't have a dairy allergy and I can eat whatever I want. And I get sick a lot. You know, I spent years in a cold and flu study in Washington State because I got sick so often. You know, we're talking 6, 7, 8 colds a year that were knock me out, you know, kind of thing. I absolutely believe that my immune system is not as strong as it should be because I wasn't breastfed.
Right.
That is not a knock to my mother.
Yeah.
Because my parents did the best they could with what they have, right? For them, it never crossed their mind to breastfeed me. No one talked to them about it. No one taught them about it. No one encouraged them to do that. No one explained what was going to happen on day 3 when my mom's milk came in and she, you know, right? Like all the things, they never even tried with me.
Yeah.
You know? And that's not on her. That's not on her. And I'm so grateful my mom she's not like riddled with guilt over those things either. She knows that like, I tried. Right.
Right.
She didn't try. She didn't even put me to the breast, but she was like, I just did what I thought you did. You know, like, that's how I fed the baby is with a bottle and with
formula. Right.
And so, you know, when we think about things that breastfeeding is really good for, and that's why I tend to say instead of things like breast is best or fed is best, what I say is breastfeeding is important.
Yeah, right? I love that.
Breastfeeding is important.
Yes.
That's it. It's not something that we can throw away. It's not something that we can just dismiss. It is important for us. And statistically, it's important to about 90% of moms because that's how many people want to breastfeed.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, it's not like us lactivists or, you know, breastfeeding Nazis. I mean, I've heard all the different things,
right?
It's really interesting being in this field as a mental health counselor too, because our two biggest like opponents or, you know, kind of people that we butt heads with are perinatal mental health counselors and safe sleep people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And I just kind of keep going back to, well, this is what we know.
Right.
Breastfeeding, when it's going well, is extremely protective against maternal mood disorders.
Yes.
Right. When breastfeeding's not going well, it's a risk factor for a maternal mood disorder. So in my brain, the way that works is the solution is not to quit breastfeeding.
Yeah.
The solution there is to support the breastfeeding, fix the breastfeeding problem, you know, like all hands on deck. We all got to get this going because there are protective factors, you know, that are important, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, folks just want to like throw it away and just say it doesn't matter. Just quit. Right.
Right.
Like, why are you doing this to yourself? And it's like, hey, they want it.
Yeah.
You know, like moms want it. And I have counseled so many people to stop breastfeeding, you know, mm-hmm. like stopping breastfeeding. I mean, I can't tell you how many people, again, as a lactation consultant, and I'm a pretty good lactation consultant. So most people I work with do end up breastfeeding well, and, you know, mm-hmm. they get on the right path and everything like that. But one of the things that, cause I used to do a talk about guilt and shame around breastfeeding.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I did is I asked parents who tried breastfeeding and struggled and didn't meet their goals, what was helpful and what was harmful, you know, kind of like, what did us as lactation consultants do and say and everything like that. And I think for a lot of us as lactation consultants, and I think a lot of society has this view of us too, is that we think of breastfeeding as all or nothing, right? Mm-hmm. And then parents kind of internalize that messaging too. It's all or nothing. I have to exclusively breastfeed for the first 6 months of my baby's life. And then I'll, of course, home make baby organic baby food for them. And right, like, and it's going to be amazing, right?
Right.
And that's, they're only going to eat clean and they're going to grow to be healthy, happy adults. You know, like mm-hmm. that's what a lot of people think. And then that's super not the reality, right?
Right.
And so for me, it's really about kind of my idea with breastfeeding is I say, you know, breastfeeding is important. First of all, I also believe that every drop counts, right? So I don't care how that human milk gets to that baby, mm-hmm. anything they get is meaningful. And any way they get it is breastfeeding, right? So if you're an exclusive pumper and your baby gets 100% of their breast milk from a bottle, that's breastfeeding, right? Mm-hmm. If your baby is getting formula through a SNS at the breast, that's breastfeeding. If you're breastfeeding 25% of the time and the other, you know, 75% of the time they're getting formula, that's breastfeeding. So when I think about things like fed is best,
yeah.
This to me is really a kind of like, how do we as parents let those standards go?
Yeah.
Right? That like, you know, and I know we say it a lot, like whatever you do is the best, right? Like, and it's true, but we have to really believe that, you know, and kind of recognize that there are lots of areas as parents that we will not be able to provide the best thing for our child,
mm-hmm.
right? Can't send our kids to the best school. We can't put them in the best car seat. We can't, you know, get into the best preschool. We don't live in the best zip code. We don't, right? Like, I mean, you can think of a million things that we don't provide the best for and we're okay with. But when it comes to breastfeeding, it's like life altering, you know, and I think that that's a big part of what I try and do as a lactation consultant is really allowing that space for that mom to grieve, you know, because that's important. And what I see is far more parents are harmed when they are told breastfeeding doesn't matter. And then years later, they learn that it actually was.
Yes.
Right. And that it did matter. Right.
Well,
far more people. I mean, the number of people that I have, you know, on their kids' third ear tubes and, you know, like chronic ear infections, asthma, allergies, right? Like all these things. And then they learn. And I've taught it in my breastfeeding class. I've had people in their 70s, you know, that are like, I didn't know. No one told me that. And here they are like, feeling sad and grieving that experience, right? So far more people are harmed by that, I find, than lactation consultants that are trying to help people breastfeed who want to breastfeed.
Right. Well, because it's like, if we think about this whole whatever is best, like even if you think about your parents' experience, right? Like you still say they did the best they could.
They absolutely.
So like it's this idea of best is like, it, but if you introduce now what you say and affirm to people is that breastfeeding is important, then it's like, if we consider it an important decision to make,
yeah,
then we have the ability to become informed and educated. And if we still feel like after we have all the information that the best choice for us is to breastfeed or not breastfeed, mm-hmm. that's different than not being given any information or not, or having the impression that this is not an important decision
right.
to make.
Right.
And then you make the best decision you can.
Yeah.
But if you don't know what all your choices are or why it's important, then it's like, then you end up maybe looking back and going, oh man, I did the best I could. But had I known that this was a more important decision, I may have chosen differently.
Absolutely.
And that may have actually been better for us than what I chose as best at that time. So it's like, I love saying that it's that breastfeeding is important, because then it is like, it's not something to just dismiss. It's something to really weigh out all the different options and opinions and then decide, you know, after knowing everything you know.
Yeah.
And I think as a new mom, like, there's so much information coming at you about what's best for so many different huge things that it's like, you're trying to make all these best decisions about all the things. But if no one's taking the time to give you information and then give you support for whatever decision you do make, you also need people to come on and support you.
Yeah.
And I think that that's, I love that, because like you're saying, if we say either one is best, then that means the other is the worst.
Yeah.
And that's that whole binary thing that's just not fair to parents, you know, or and babies. Yeah.
Right. And we should want so much more than to just be fed.
Right.
Like, it's just, God, I hope that's not our only job as a parent, you know?
Well, it's the same as the last conversation we had about, like, is really our bar that moms aren't dying, moms and babies aren't dying during birth? Like, really, that's like living through birth is best. Like, are we going to start saying that? You know what I mean?
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally. No, I totally agree. And it is just, it's hard, you know, and I really do. I feel so sad for the way that so many moms are let down. So many ways, you know, I mean, it's so frustrating. And, you know, I don't remember if I said this in the last episode, because I know we talked about a lot of different things, but, you know, I just always go back to this, like, this stat that 90% of people want to breastfeed in the United States, right? 60% of people don't meet their breastfeeding goals. That's who I care about, right? I have no interest in convincing people who don't want to breastfeed to breastfeed. I have never had that conversation once in my life with someone who didn't want to breastfeed, right? Like, it's okay, I'm out.
Yeah.
my job's done here. You know, like, I have zero interest in that conversation. So I'm focused on that 60% who wanted to, but didn't meet their breastfeeding goals. And I just think it's really, you know, it's really, really atrocious to me how the medical system has really let those moms down. You know, most doctors who work, you know, pediatricians, OBGYNs, family practice docs, right? The ones who are working with people who are pregnant, having babies, early parenthood, most of them have had 0 hours of clinical breastfeeding experience, right? On average, the average nurse has had about 3 hours of breastfeeding education, no hands-on clinical experience, right? And I just think about, like, what profession do we have in the world if 90% of your clients want in?
Hello, Cammy's dog.
So if we had, kind of like any other profession, if 90% of your clientele wanted something, would you, like, and who else would ignore and choose not to Google something, for example? I mean, like, the questions I get are so simple, you know? And I was definitely easy on providers for a long time. I was like, well, breastfeeding, one of my mentors, she always said, like, well, we, you know, stopped teaching about breastfeeding in medical school for about 100 years. And so people are still trying to catch up, you know, like they're trying to learn about it again. And so and now I'm like, well, now everything's
right. Google. It's not like you have to go to school.
Yeah. It's not even hard to find.
Yeah.
Right? It's not even hard to find if penicillin is compatible with breastfeeding.
Right.
It's not even a hard thing to look for. And yet a provider will tell a parent that she needs to stop breastfeeding while she takes penicillin for, you know, a hot tub rash, you know, or whatever, right? Like whatever it is.
Yeah.
A medication that her own baby could have if they had an infection.
Right.
So I see it as like really lazy, you know, I see it as really lazy. And now I'm not, I have no problem throwing providers under the bus when it comes to stuff like this. You know, it's just, it's really frustrating to me because moms want this and they deserve to have people that care about what they want. You know, they are the customers.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so I really feel, I really feel for parents and, you know, and I understand like the hurt and the pain that people go through. I had a woman come to my drop-in group years ago who had come to me and she came with a 1-year-old baby. And she said, you know, typically at drop-in groups, I'm like, okay, what's going on? What do you want to talk about? And I kind of assess what everyone's needs are and see if I can group people, you know, like, okay, these 3 people are here for low supply. These people are here, you know, this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And anyway, she had a 1-year-old and she said, I heard you're a really good lactation consultant. She'd come in from, you know, like a suburb about a half hour away. And she said, I really want my baby to breastfeed. I want you to help with my baby breastfeeding. And I was like, how old's your baby? And she said, 1, you know, and then I said, well, when was the last time your baby breastfed? And she said, 3 weeks. And she said she had come to all, you know, a bunch of lactation consultants. No one could help her and stuff. And I just was, I mean, my heart just broke for her, you know, and I sat her down and I said, I'm not going to help your baby breastfeed. Your baby's 1.
Yeah.
You know, like your baby, like that ship sailed, right? Yeah. This isn't quite the language I'm using,
right?
But like from a clinical perspective, like we're not going to do this.
Right.
And I said, I'm so sorry, but I'm not going to help your baby breastfeed.
Yeah.
And she said, why? And I was like, well, it's just been a really long time. And I go, why do you want to breastfeed your baby? And she said, I just want to bond with him and stuff. And I looked at her and I said, your baby loves you. You know, I'm looking at this baby sitting on her lap, just looking at her with those starry eyes that, you know, like 1-year-olds look at their moms with because they're the center of their world, right? Like just all this stuff. And I'm just like, your baby loves you. Why don't you see that?
Yeah.
Right. And just kind of like recognize, and that's the conversation, right? But I'm sure multiple LCs were like, let's try shoving babies' heads into boot, right? And not recognizing just the pain that this mom was in, the grief that she was feeling, that no one had really given her space, probably because they determined she was crazy or loony or kooky or what, you know, like whatever.
Right.
But that, you know, that's it's so sad, you know, like it's so sad. And I hate that moms have to carry that, you know? And you know, that's one of the things, cause you know, I came into the field from an attachment and bonding perspective. That's what made me fall in love with breastfeeding.
Yeah.
You know, but what I always teach, and I teach this in our breastfeeding class, is that while breastfeeding is a unique way to bond with your baby, it is not the only way to bond with your baby.
Yes.
Right? There is nothing that can replicate it. Bottle feeding is not breastfeeding. It will never be breastfeeding. And that's okay.
Right?
Like, that's okay. There are so many other ways to bond and attach with a child and vice versa. And it is a special way. you know, and for those that are able to do it and get the support they need, it can be a very meaningful experience. Yes. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. I feel like Cammie, we just need like 5 episodes with you. And I know for a fact that you're like someone who believes in very like, you will commit your life to like these long series podcasts. but we will have to wrap up. And so I guess I just want to kind of round out the conversation. We went in sort of like a different direction than we had intended. Yeah, and I'm totally great with that because we haven't really had a lot of in-depth conversations about breastfeeding. We mostly talk to moms about what their experience was with breastfeeding, but we rarely get like experts on the subject to talk about it.
I noticed that.
Yeah, I know. So it's really wonderful. It's been hard because we walk this line of like wanting to feature stories, but not wanting to like be directly advising parents Absolutely. On things, but I don't think that that's what this is at all, you know? And so I'm just like, and it's a great follow-up to your first episode where you share what an impact your breastfeeding journey had on your entire life and your kids' lives. And so I think this has been great, but I think that one thing that is sort of a barrier, like this is a very obvious statement, but a barrier for a lot of moms with breastfeeding and on their journeys is that just the basic stressors of their everyday lives don't allow for the room and space to breastfeed for so many reasons, like the stress factor, the having to go back to work factor, the whatever else they're juggling in life factor. Totally all the things. And so it is really hard. And so I guess one thing that is unique in Washington is you guys have been working really hard, from what I understand, to try to come up with ways to give moms more support during the perinatal period to where it's just a built-in thing.
Yeah.
Kind of like you're talking about with like pumping protection laws, you know, like so that moms and babies are protected for this very crucial amount of time. And so just briefly, can you kind of touch on like what some of the efforts have been there to support moms, like at a legislative level even, or, you know, like some of the things that Washington is looking at implementing there?
Yeah. So one of kind of starting like big picture macro is that we did pass paid parental leave in 2018. Is that correct? So I was a campaign manager on that. There was a group of about four or five of us that were brought together to pass paid leave in the state.
Just in your spare time.
Yeah. And I was
just in Cammie's spare time.
And I was actually I was the last person on the team to be brought on. And the reason was because of breastfeeding. Because they really recognize, or we really recognize that bipartisan support was essential in passing paid leave, you know, for the state.
Yeah.
And, you know, our, in general, Democratic legislators were pretty gung-ho. You know, usually that's not a hard sell for the Democrats. For Republicans in the state, it was a little harder. You know, they really were concerned about small businesses, you know, like the small business impact of people taking a lot of time off after they have their babies. Of course, the fiscal impact that it would have on the state, which is something that a lot of people are concerned about. And we know that in general, like Republicans were fairly pro breastfeeding and pro kind of like families, moms being home with their babies in those early days, right? Like this is kind of, again, I'm talking very broadly. So I hope it's a unique issue in that way. It's not like offensive, you know, or anything, but, you know, those were things that we knew were important to them. And so that's why I was kind of tapped on to come onto the team to really focus on that. There was also another tribal side of it because tribes were exempt. They had to opt in. And so there was kind of a piece of like, could I help support getting information out to tribal leaders to opt in to paid leave, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, we passed it with bipartisan support. It was a really incredible, you know, like really incredible process. I had never been involved in something like that before. So it was a huge learning experience for me. But now in Washington State, all parents are, and people who are experiencing other medical challenges, so it's a paid parental and medical leave, are able and entitled to at least 12 weeks of paid leave, regardless of their income. And in fact, we created an equitable payment system. So employees contribute to the system and employers also contribute, and people get paid a percentage of their salary. The lowest paid workers get up to 90%, because you think about, you know, right, if you're only making $10 an hour, getting 50% of your income is not enough to get,
not adequate,
you're not going to be able to stay home. And so we really saw that as a barrier. So the lowest income workers get, I believe, about 90% of their salary. And then the higher income workers get up to 50%. And there's kind of thresholds for that, mm-hmm. right? Self-employed people can also contribute to it. And so that's really huge, because, you know, those of us, the gig workers, the 1099 workers, you know, we are often left out of those types of things, which make it really hard, right? Yeah. Really hard. So that's, you know, one of the things that we've seen. In general, Washington State has a fairly high breastfeeding rate. And so we're really, you know, and kind of the numbers from paid leave went into effect, even though we passed it in like 2017-18, it took a couple years to get it going, right? Mm-hmm. So those first families, first recipients of the paid leave, we should be getting their breastfeeding rates soon. You know, like it's
That's
a couple
exciting.
Years. You know, it's a couple years behind. So hopefully we'll be seeing those soon. But that was just a really, really special project to work on. Again, learned a lot. We also are working here, just passed legislation for Medicaid to pay for doulas. And that law was signed into legislation last year. And now we are working on the details of that. So what does that look like, you know, and how does that work? And so making sure that we're working really hard to make sure the voice of Indigenous doulas is heard in that, those, you know, because it is our community that, because we have a higher number of Medicaid recipients, right? It is our moms that are going to be served by, you know, doulas will be more accessible to them, right? Because at this point, there's 3 Indigenous doula orgs in Washington State. So unless you live in Spokane, Yakima, or Seattle, you know, like the Seattle County area, you know, you have to pay for a doula, you know, it's kind of like how it works. And so we're really hoping that this will allow access to doulas, which we know impacts breastfeeding rates, you know, so.
I just can't even like wait to see those numbers.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't want to be like too highly hopeful.
Yeah.
But there just are so many issues that we know are issues when it comes to breastfeeding, when it comes to like especially mood disorders and mental health struggles. Like, man, there are so many moms I know and families I know where if they just had a little more space around that time, and not had to rush back into life before everyone was ready.
Yep.
I think it will make a tremendous difference. So I'm excited to see what that looks like.
Yeah. And that, you know, that whole piece of just kind of like the support that's provided. Cause even if the thing is like, you know, when we look at Canada, who has a year of paid leave, mm-hmm. they have better breastfeeding rates than the US. But it's only about 10% higher, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so it's not that much better. So it's not just about having time off, right? Like, and this is where we really go back to the support.
Right.
Is the key ingredient here, you know, is like where is someone getting skilled support? You know, whether that's from a lactation consultant, a doula, a breastfeeding counselor, an auntie, you know, like
that's a good
knowledgeable
point.
Sister, right? Like anyone that is where I believe the priority should be. I love that paid leave will, I do believe it's going to make a difference. I do believe we'll see an increase in our breastfeeding rates at least until 3 months, right? Like, I hope that we see that. But then, man, there's a huge drop after, you know, from 3 months to 6 months, a huge drop. And so, you know, that really goes to like what, you know, what's going on at work sites, what's happening, you know, as far as like getting time off to pump, education. I mean, we just saw, I don't know if folks saw, but like Halle Berry, you know, who was the newest Little Mermaid, right? Like, she just had a baby and she posted the other day a picture on her Instagram of her pumping in her dressing room, right? On the set somewhere. And she was asking for advice on pumping, saying that she's skipping a lot of pumping sessions because she's busy making a movie, right? Or doing something incredible.
Right.
But I mean, I know like several of the, you know, any ELC that saw that, we were like, oh no, you know, like you can't skip pumping sessions.
Yeah.
you can't do that, you know, type thing. And, but like, those aren't things moms should know. That's our job to tell people, right? And I think I shared that in the first one, like none of this is something that parents should be responsible for.
Yeah.
I hear that all, oh gosh, the number of moms that I would hear say, next baby, I'm going to make sure, like I'll check their tongue right away, you know, that kind of stuff. And I'm like, yeah, you shouldn't have to do that. Like all you should have to do is love your baby.
Right.
It's all of our job. I mean, that's the thing is that like, so often people perceive the low breastfeeding rates or breastfeeding failure, whatever language you want to use, as the failure of mothers.
Yes.
And I'm like, no, this is a failure of society. This is a failure of those of us that are supposed to be helping you and taking care of you. It is not your job.
Right.
To be a lactation consultant for your own baby.
Right.
Right. That's not anyone's job. And that is the last thing I want any mom to do postpartum.
Yeah.
Is figure out what's going on with her baby. Right.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, when I get into like those conversations about guilt and shame and kind of going back to fed is best and, you know, that kind of stuff, it's like, no, you know, while I disagree with the premise, I absolutely disagree or agree with like this idea that like, you know, we should be doing better, you know,
and
there's just a lot of, you know, and a lot of that is our own organization who certifies us. I mean, there's like one counseling course that's required. Social workers and therapists aren't considered an approved health professional where we used to be, you know, which is an easier pathway to becoming a lactation consultant. So we've really moved away as a field from those counseling skills. And I say as a lactation consultant, 90% of my job is counseling.
Totally.
Most breastfeeding problems are very easy to handle. Very easy, you know, but it's the, how are you doing?
Yeah.
That's why I'm in a home for 3 hours. Right. I'm not doing a 3-hour oral assessment.
Right. Like, and that's why the doula thing is so key, right? So key. Because you're like you're saying, and I didn't really have this thought until just now when we're talking about it, but like paid leave is great, fantastic. But if I think about my own journey and my own story in those beginning days, like, yes, more time off would have been great and to not worry about the financial stress of that. But at the same time, if I had gone on by myself for an extended period of time without support, that actually might have been more harmful.
Absolutely.
Because I would have just been isolated. I would have had no reason to go and re-engage with the world. And had I not had someone coming over to support me and check on us and see how are you doing? How can I help? Like it could have actually gone
absolutely
really badly.
I mean, I don't know the statistics on this, but I do believe that our stay-at-home moms who are doing all the things are the most isolated, unsupported people out there.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I would absolutely believe that there are much higher rates of maternal mood disorders and more severe levels of maternal mood disorders, suicide, all that, right? Like all the things, because it is the stay-at-home moms that we have really abandoned as a society. Yeah.
Yep.
Right?
Like, and who we tell all the time, you're supposed to love this. You have everything you need. Yeah. You wanted it. This is, you don't even have to go to work. And so then that's like an added layer of guilt and shame where Absolutely. They're thinking, why can't I be enjoying this time? I should Absolutely. Be, you know?
That's yes. That's yeah. It's yeah. so hard. It's so hard. Yeah. But yeah. Yeah, it's special. And then I'll just, you know, I don't know if it's like time to close, but just kind of like circling back on that
yeah, stuff
around
do.
Like families and the guilt and the shame that that parents feel, moms feel. I kind of like always go back to that teaching, and I'm fairly certain that I shared it, is that like that reminder that your baby chose you. Right. And they chose you with infinite wisdom. Right. They didn't choose you because you're going to exclusively breastfeed them. They didn't choose you, you know, because you're going to do certain things a certain way. They chose you because you were the perfect parent for them, you know, and that's what I really want families to and especially moms to embrace, you know, is that I believe that. I believe wholeheartedly that every parent is the perfect parent for their child. And there will be so many, so many things that other people will do better than us.
Yeah.
Right. But nobody can do for our child what we can do for them. No one.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just kind of like what I always go back to. You know, I just love looking at these babies and seeing the way they look at their moms. And,
yeah.
you know, they really are in love with them, you know, yeah. and it's just like so special to see that. And I often, you know, I just often wish like moms could see that too.
Yeah.
Right. But it's so yeah. hard when you're in it, when
you're too close to the project.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what it is. And that's yeah. where like, again, that support comes in. Yeah. You know, I just spent the last week with my best friend and his wife.
Yeah.
who had a baby, and I was honored to be invited to be there, you know, at their birth. And I spent about a week, you know, just like feeding them, checking on breastfeeding, just doing the auntie thing, you know, and it was such a gift to do. And that's what all my, you know, sisters would get from me. So my sister-in-law, other friends that have asked me to do that. But I was, you know, I was telling the mom about, you know, how so much of what, because I just kind of get in a groove even there, right? They're like my friends, but I get in this kind of like groove that I get in. And so I talk a lot for babies when I'm around parents and babies, right? Because that's kind of like how I see my way of being able to like tell parents like, oh, your baby's so happy in your arms, or, you know, I'll do like a lot of voicing of babies, like, oh, mom, you're so pretty. And, you know, like, you're funny. Oh, awesome. Will you talk more? You know, like when like we're talking and baby's just yes. like, ah, oh, you know, and I do a lot of that because I hope that helps to show parents, you know, like what their baby's thinking, you know, because so often we don't know what they're thinking. And so to be able to reflect back to a parent, like what their baby thinks about them and feels about them and what we're able to see, because like you said, when you're too close to the project, when you're in the thick of it, you can't see those things, right? It's like putting on an outfit that you thought would be, you know, you see someone wearing the exact same body type and they're wearing the same outfit, and you're like, I could wear the wide leg jeans, like those will look yeah. great on me. And then you look in the mirror and you're like, those don't look good on me at all, right? Because we can't see ourselves in that way. And so I just like love being with families to really reflect that back to them and show them how much, you know, how much their baby loves them and how beautiful they are. You know, I always tell moms, like, you're the standard.
Oh my gosh. No, like I feel like, oh, I'm crying because I feel like even if I had someone just do that, like if that was the only thing that you had been in my house doing, what I thought my baby was looking at me with was like, just like I felt like such a failure in those early days that I just, all I could see was like, mom, why can't you do this?
Yeah.
Or mom, why you like the voice that I made up for my babies was not
not that
what you're saying. Yeah. And I think that like the damage that's done when we perceive failure and are living in guilt and shame like that is, it's just really strong.
Yeah.
And so I just like, even that little thing alone is just, it's amazing how simple like that kind of disruption can be and like a changing of the lens.
Yes.
So that was unexpected, but it just, it like kicked me back into like, oh, I like, what was I thinking that my babies were saying when they were looking up at me? And it was not that.
Yes.
So
Yeah. And that's where those of us that get to work in homes, right? Mm-hmm. We get to hold that space, right? Like we get to see that because we don't see that, you know. Right. I am such a strength-based person. So like even in, I've been into very, very challenging homes, but those babies love those mamas, you know, like it is just, it is a deep connection, and it is very hard to damage.
Right
Like it is very, very, very hard to damage. And that's what, you know, I always want to remind parents, you know, like, yes, we make mistakes, yes, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes they're really, really, really big ones, mm-hmm. and we generally still love our moms, right? Like we still want relationship. You have to be extremely toxic, mm-hmm. right? Extremely mm-hmm. toxic to damage that relationship. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, this, that reminder that you know, you're the standard for that child. You're the standard of beauty. Your voice is the standard, you know, of like the best voices in the world would be compared to yours, you know, like mm-hmm. the best artists in the world would be compared to you, you know, like that's the beauty of babies in early childhood, you know, is you are the center of the world. Mm-hmm. And then they become teenagers and everyone's better than you, right? Like other things, but you gotta lay that foundation.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much again. Yeah. I wish we could just talk all day, and Amy had to go to an appointment. So listeners will probably notice that Amy dropped off midway through, but she's such a huge fan of yours and just loves being able to help us share your voice with our listeners. So thank you so much, Cami.
I appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you, everyone. Toksha.
Mother Love is hosted by Healthy Mothers, Healthy Babies, the Montana Coalition, a nonprofit organization dedicated to the health and well-being of families who are expecting or raising little ones. Opinions and views expressed in these interviews do not necessarily represent the views of HMHB as an organization. We sincerely value the lived experiences shared on Mother Love, and we understand that not everyone will agree with or relate to all of what is shared. Mother Love exists to help our guests and listeners honor and embrace their own stories and experiences. If the content in this episode has caused you concern or distress, please reach out to someone you trust for support. Speaking up about our struggles is half the battle, sometimes more than half, and there are many providers who can and want to help. Visit our statewide online resource guide at www.hmhb-lifts.org to help you find resources in your area. Thank you to our incredible editor and producer, Brooke Boone Miller, for sharing her gifts with us. She's a mom and she gets it, and for that we are so grateful.